We're doing Parshat Tetzaveh. In Parshat Tetzaveh, we are taught about the holy oil that was used to light the menorah. We're taught about the clothing that Aaron and his sons wore, the special clothing they wore during their service of the temple. There are four garments that a Kohen Adyot, an ordinary Kohen, wears, and eight garments that a Kohen Gadol wears. And then we're taught about the sacrifices that they brought as part of the inauguration process. At the end of the parasha, we're taught about the Tamid sacrifice, that every day two sacrifices were offered, every morning and every evening a sacrifice. And the parasha concludes with the mitzvah of setting up a small altar. That's the altar which was called the gold altar, Mizbech Zahav, which was very small, one amma by one amma. And on that altar, the only thing they would serve was the incense, the ktores. And that's the parasha in a nutshell. Okay, so let's review the parasha. There's a famous vort, I don't know who said it first, but there's a famous vort about this parasha that from the beginning of Moshe's birth in Parshat Shmot till the end of the Torah, there's no parasha where Moshe's name is omitted. Moshe's name appears in every parasha of the Torah from Moshe's birth in the beginning of Shmos till the end of the Torah, except for this parasha. So I think it's the Baal HaTurim that writes that in next week's parasha, when the Jews will transgress with the golden calf, Moshe says, forgive them or erase me from your book. I don't want to have a portion in your book. So the Ribbono Shel Olam said, you said I should erase you from my book. I'm not going to erase you. But being that the tzaddik said something, so our sages say when a person says a curse, even with a condition, part of that curse comes true. And so that's why Hashem took out Moshe's name. It doesn't appear in this week's parasha. Hashem says, you command the Jews. Hashem speaks to him, but that never calls him by name. So the Baal Turim says, but you read Parshas Kisisa, and a whole year passes. You go full cycle till you come back to the parasha before Kisisa, and only there Moshe's name gets erased. As though Hashem said, I'm going to leave it for the last parasha where I have to actually fulfill that curse. So Parshat Tetzaveh. We're first taught about the fine oil that was used. Our sages say they only took the first oils, the oils that were ripened the best, from the best location. It was brought from different parts of the land where the olives grew best. Every evening and every morning, we have a machlokas Rambam Rashi. Was the menorah lit only in the evening? Or in the morning when it's described that Aaron would come in and cleanse the menorah, did he light it in the morning as well? So that's two opinions. Whether the menorah was only lit, we know it was lit in the afternoon. When Aaron came in the afternoon, it's obvious that he lit the menorah. In the morning it says he cleansed the menorah, he cleansed the wicks, he prepared the menorah. So Rambam is of the opinion that in the morning he would light it as well. Aaron and his sons are given royal clothing. The clothing that Aaron is going to wear are the royal clothing of the time. The Sephorno writes, in the time of the Torah, this is the type of clothing that kings wore. And that's why we find, for example, that Ahasuerus in Purim, he dons all the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, because it was considered royal clothing. So the Kohen Gadol has eight garments. Let's begin with the Kohen Gadol's garments. We have the thread that's used in many garments. The thread had five strings in it. They were able to make the gold so thin that it became a string. So they would have a string of gold. They would have a string of tchelet, that's wool that's dyed blue. They would have a string of argaman, which we translate as purple, but it's probably a type of red, and tolat shani, which is a red string, and shesh moshzar, which is a mixture. Some say shesh moshzar is white linen. So you have linen thread mixed with wool thread, right? What linen? We said one string of white linen. We said two strings of wool, a string of purple dyed wool and red dyed wool. Now we often find red dye that's called tolat shani, red dye. Why? How is that red wool? So there was a seed that had a worm in it, and they would crush the seed, and the blood of the worm that came out of the seed would give them the red blood, the red dye. That's why it was called tolat shani. Tolat means a worm. So we have a chut shani is a red string. So here you have a picture of the different strings with mixed together over here. And okay, so we have the ephod. We'll begin from outside in. So the Kohen Gadol wore an apron that tied around the back, came around the back and tied in the front. Now that apron had a belt called Cheshev Ha'ifod. So here you see part one of the apron. Okay, it has all these beautiful designs. And this was the outermost garment the Kohen Gadol wore. This apron, okay, the ephod. Now the ephod also had straps that came up around the back. Yeah? Now these straps came up around the back, and when they hit his shoulders, so on top he had two stones, and on those stones were engraved six tribes on one stone, six tribes on another stone. So that's what's called kitfot ephod, the shoulder, call them the shoulder stones of the ephod. And over there he had two stones with a gold setting, which each one had the six names, six tribes. Here you see the six tribes on the stones in a gold encasing. How exactly they were written, there are different opinions in the Talmud. Whether it was Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yudah, Yisachar, Zvulun on one, Binyamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Yosef on another, or Yehuda came first on the stones, or Shimon came first on this stone. Different opinions in the Talmud how the names were written. But bottom line, you had 12 tribes, six on each side. The question is, what's the stress? The number of letters, the order? Okay, yes?
Just a brief question. You said avot, right? Avot. Is that similar to in the stones? You learned in another class that this relationship between avot and todot with the same names in the we call them the Melachot of Shabbat. Is that what you understand also?
I don't know. I don't know. Telling you things I don't know.
Do you know if the color of the stones in the shoulder was black or red?
It says Avnei Shoham.
Sister Onyx. And
so Shoham. I don't know. They draw the Shoham as being dark. They're pretty accurate in the description of the stones. Need a second. Shoham v'yashfei. So here we'll see it because one of the third row has a Shoham stone, and you see they draw Shoham as being grayish. Yeah. It says that row, one of them was Shoham. And the commentaries do describe what each color was. So we'll get there. Okay, so coming off of the shoulders, he also had, remember we have over here on top, we have the two shoulder stones, the Kitvot Ha'ifod, and then at the end, he had little loops from which would come down, would connect the Choshen, the breastplate. What's the breastplate? It's actually made of material. Here you see it's made of material. And on the breastplate were 12 stones with the 12 names of the 12 tribes. Also, Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov were engraved within the, interspersed in the names of the 12 tribes. So you have each tribe had their stone. Just like we know each tribe has their month. And each tribe has their form in the zodiac. And each tribe has their flag. And each tribe wore a talis that corresponded to the flag, and all of that corresponded to the color of their stone, which corresponded to the traits, to the attributes of the different tribes. So on the breastplate, you have Odem Pitedah Bareket, Nofich Sapiri Alom, Leshem Shivova Achlama, Tarshish Shaman Yoshfei. Yoshfei was the stone of Benjamin, right? All the multicolors, because Benjamin has this all-encompassing nature. So those are the stones on the breastplate. And the stones go in the order of the tribes, right? Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Gad, Asher, Yisachar, Zvulun, Yosef, Binyamin. Okay, they put it in that order. There's different opinions as to what the order is. Gad, Asher, Yosef, and Binyamin. That's this opinion.
But everyone agrees about which types of gems, what colors they had, each of them.
No.
Not even that.
Some of the colors we have machloket on, what the color was. In the Medrash already, there's a machloket.
Do you remember reading any commentary by anyone about why each stone was chosen for each?
Yes. Look in my summary online, yeah. And I bring a summary on this parsha, on 123torah.org. Okay, so the uppermost garment that the Kohen Gadol was wearing was this apron, which came over the back, and then here you had the shoulder stones, and then you had loops over here that connected downward with golden chains to hold the breastplate. The breastplate was made of material. It had all these stones on it, and then it folded backward. The material would fold backward. It was twice as long. You'd fold it backward, something like this, and then inside they would slip in the Urim V'Tumim, which was God's secret name. And then the Choshen would light up, meaning when the Kohen Gadol would be asked questions by the king or a general, he would stand before the Holy of Holies. The king or the general would stand behind him, ask him a question. The Kohen Gadol would look forward at the Holy of Holies. Then he'd look down at the breastplate and he'd see different letters light up. And then he'd have to figure out how to put them together and give an answer. Sometimes he got it wrong, as we saw with the story of Hannah. But generally, he was supposed to have Ruach HaKodesh and get it right. Meaning, yes?
But I understand that they made some of those things already ready for the Kohanim today. How can they make something they're not sure?
It's a good question. It's a very good question. I don't have a good answer for you. Now under this, the Kohen Gadol wore a long robe, which was called a me'il. And the me'il was made of blue wool. So this must have been pretty hot, right? Wool. He's wearing wool clothing. Blue wool. And here you have a picture of the Kohen Gadol's blue wool robe. We have different opinions. According to the Rambam, it looked like a poncho. It had a front and a back, like a long tzitzit, a blue tzitzit. According to Nachmanides, it came all around. It was like a sleeveless robe. And Ravid holds it even had sleeves. Okay, at the bottom of the Me'il, the Kohen Gadol wore bells. And interspersed between the bells were pomegranates made of all these different types of dyes, purple dyes. That's on the bottom of the coat. So wherever the Kohen Gadol went, the bells rang, and you knew he was coming. You could respect him, you could stand up. So the Kohen Gadol had these bells. There's a machlokas, Rashi Nachmanides. Rashi holds the way I just explained. There were bells, and in between them there were these shapes of pomegranates, like tassels at the end of the robe, that were just interspersed in between the bells. Nachmanides is of the opinion that the bells went within the pomegranates. They'd sew them into the pomegranates and they'd ring bells. You see on the bottom of the pomegranates, you have the bells. That's Nachmanides' opinion. Okay. The Kohen Gadol, we discussed earlier in the Tractate Shabbos, that the Kohen Gadol wore the equivalent of a band across his forehead, and that had written on it, Kodesh Lashem, sanctified in God's name, and it had Hashem's hidden name on it, the Tetragrammaton. Now, the tzitz that he wore on his forehead was attached with blue string around his head, and it went over the top. So he wore the tzitz on his forehead. Above the tzitz, he wore his tefillin. And then above that, he wore a very long white turban that formed his hat. Okay, so the Kohen Gadol also wore a shirt called the ktonet. Now here, I'll tell you a little exercise. Our Rebbe taught us in third grade, Rabbi Schwab, how to make something checkered. We'll get to that in just a second. And they wore little pants, white pants, like white shorts. Those were the michnasayim. So if the Kohen Gadol is getting dressed, he first wears his michnasayim, his shorts. And then he wears his ketonet above that, this checkered white shirt. And then above that, he's going to wear his me'il, the blue robe, right, with the bells on the bottom. And then above the me'il, he's going to wear the ephod. The me'il comes, the ephod, and the ephod is attached to the choshen, right? After he's going to have to put on his hat. I guess he puts on the hat, and then he puts on the tefillin, and then he has to put on the tzitz on his forehead, because that covers all of them. The straps of the tzitz would cover the tefillin and the hat. So those are the eight garments of the Kohen Gadol. Now, we'll pause for just a second. Here you have different shapes of the hats. The Kohen Gadol's was flatter, because the Kohen Gadol's hat had to have room for the string to go over it. It was a flatter hat, but it was very, very long, the turban. The Kohen Ediot, the regular Kohen, had a turban that went very long. They would wrap it around their head. Give me 1 second. I'll tell you the exact measurements, if I can find it. I don't see it here, but I remember that it was 32 amos long. That's very, very long. That's a very long. I mean, you're talking about something here. The Kohen Ediot was 16 amos. So that's almost 30 feet. That's like from that. Okay, you guys know what 30 feet is. It's like the length of this whole hallway and more. I mean, that's a very long piece of wool. What?
About 12 meters.
Okay. 12 meters, you guys understand? That's a very big turban. It must be very heavy. Yeah, unless the material was very, very thin. So it could be it was very, very thin, because otherwise it would be very hot. I'm saying it could be, if you look at the Arabs, what they wear around their head is a very thin material, which you could wrap many times, and it doesn't get so hot. I mean, eventually, I guess anything gets hot. But so they'd have to wrap it many, many times. So that's the hats of the Kohanim. The Kohen Ediot, he simply has the pants, the shirt, the hat. The Kohen Ediot also had a robe. He also had an avnet. He also had an apron. Okay, so that gives us a picture of the Kohen. The Kohen Ediot, the regular Kohen, had ketonet, a shirt, michnasayim, pants, migbat, a hat, and an avnet, some kind of apron that went with a belt. So now we covered the clothing. I'll show you a quick exercise. You roll up a piece of paper as tight as you can, and then you go to the middle, and you squeeze this way. Okay, gentlemen, you're all with me? You squeeze the middle, and then you squeeze the other way over here. And then you go up a notch and you squeeze it again the other way. Squeeze again and squeeze again. So what you have should look like this. Okay, next, you squeeze the middle.
Show again. Yeah.
Squeeze the middle.
Yeah.
And then on a 90 degree angle, you squeeze above it. Then you go again, 90 degree angle, squeeze again. Okay? And you do the same thing going downwards. So your whole piece of paper is going to look like this. Okay? Oh, you're giving it away. Now you squeeze nice and tight each time. And then, when you open it up, you end up with a checkered piece of paper, which is a nice way to explain to children what a checkered shirt of the Kohen Gadol looked like. See our checkered piece of paper? Got checkers on it? Yeah. And now we can show kids what a checkered shirt looks like. Okay?
Or you can make lamps.
Okay, so that's arts and crafts for Parashat Tetzaveh. We'll move forward in the parasha. So we finished the garments of the Kohen Gadol. That is not how they made the checkered shirts. No. The Kohen Gadol was anointed with special oil, what's called Shemen HaMishcha. When a person was anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha, it made an indelible mark. You could tell the person had a shine, he had a radiation that didn't move for the rest of his life. There's an interesting Tosfos Rosh in Tractate Horios. The verse in Psalm says, "Kashemen atov ayored al hazakan zakan Aaron," like good oil trickling down the beard of Aaron. Tosfos Rosh writes, he quotes a Medrash. The Medrash says that Aaron was clean shaven, and when the oil trickled down as Moshe anointed him, so it trickled down his face, and then two droplets of oil formed at the bottom of his chin and never dripped, and they remained permanently on his face instead of a beard. So when you'd see Aaron, you could see the markings of the Shemen HaMishcha. Chazal tell us that a person was anointed by the Shemen HaMishcha, it left a mark that couldn't be removed for life. So King David was anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha. Aaron was anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha, his sons. And they wore the royal clothing, the clothing of the Kohanim Gdolim. They were told to bring the sacrifices, which was the inaugurating sacrifices of the Kohanim. We move forward, and we have the commandment of having a sacrifice brought on the altar twice a day. You bring young goats up to a year old twice a day, one in the morning, one in the evening. And that is Olat Tamid, a constant sacrifice. So in the introduction to the Ein Yaakov, we learned Ein Yaakov earlier tonight, he quotes the following Medrash. They asked the rabbis, what is the most all-encompassing mitzvah of the Torah? And one of the rabbis said, the mitzvah of bringing a Tamid sacrifice every morning and every evening. So that's food for thought. Why is that so encompassing of the Torah? Generally, this is quoted when people want to stress the importance of consistency. On this place where I'm sitting now, 3 or 4 years ago, we had a special class with another rabbi of the Machon who told the following story. He'd been learning in university. He wasn't observant. And he was attending Chabad. And then he flew to Israel for a summer. And he went to Tzfat. And he came back to his university after the summer. And he had payas and he had tzitzis. And he was dressed like a yeshiva guy. And he knocks on the door of the Chabad house. And the Rebbetzin answers the door. He says, Rebbetzin, I was in Israel. And I've learned to be observant. She says, that's wonderful. He says, yeah, I have tzitzis, I have tefillin, I keep Shabbos, I'm doing everything. And she says, that's amazing, that's wonderful. I'm so happy for you. Please don't come back to the Chabad house. So he says, I thought you'd be so proud. I'm doing all these mitzvot. Why are you telling me not to come back to the Chabad house? So she said, well, my husband isn't home right now, so I can't invite you inside to talk. Let's go for a walk and talk. And she went for a stroll with him on the university campus. And she said, look, every year we have students like this who go to Israel. They get all excited. They say they're going to keep everything. They come back, and it lasts about 3 months. And then they leave it all. We don't need that here in Chabad. So if that's the route you're going to take, we're not interested. If you want to sincerely grow, I want you to come back to our Chabad house, but accept on yourself one mitzvah, but promise me that one mitzvah you're going to keep, and you're not going to stop keeping. I need you to keep one thing, but keep it consistently. Everything else, I'm not discussing. So the guy said, but Rabbitson, I'm ready to keep so much. What do you mean I should keep only one? She said, I need you to keep it long term. Choose one mitzvah, think about it, come back and tell me one mitzvah. But on that one mitzvah, you're going to stick to it. And he said, again, in this place, he said he went back to the university, he rejoined the Chabad, and by the end of the year, keeping that one mitzvah was so hard. He didn't tell us what that one mitzvah was, I don't know. He said it was so hard. It was so hard. He had gone back to his environment, and it was hard. He was trying to grow by leaps and bounds quickly, and he found that it was much more difficult. So growth, true growth, is going to have its ups and have its downs, but it has to be consistent in spite of the ups and downs. So that means we have our weak days, we have our strong days. We have to try to maintain enough consistency that we're balanced. That even though I have my downs, but I'm still, generally, that's the route I'm going. A guy says, I'm going to daven a minyan every day. Wait, maybe you should daven only shachrit. Maybe you should say, I will daven shachrit every day, I will wear tefillin every day, and I will try to make minyan. When I do, when I don't, I'll do my best. But I won't miss putting on tefillin every day. Take a small minimum. Putting on tefillin, saying Kriyat Shema, I've accomplished that. I know I can be consistent on that on my worst day. I'm not giving up on that. Then I'll think about when I'm ready to move on to the next one. Whenever I can, I should daven a minyan. I should daven a minyan every day, of course. Now, it's easier when you're in yeshiva. Your schedule is set for you. You could daven three times a day minyan. There's no reason not to. Daven a minyan, great. And then when vacation comes, we're only a month and a half away from vacation. So then set yourself a minimum. Tell yourself, okay, I'm going to try to make minyan every day. I'm going to try to make three times a day minyan. If I'm holding at a place where I could say, but I will guarantee that I won't miss three times davening a day with the minyan when I can or with not, that's great. Sometimes a person's at a place where he says, I can only guarantee that I'll put on tefillin every day. Davening, I'll try to. Every person has to gauge himself, but set a minimum. And that minimum, stick to. Where that minimum is, every person has to figure out for himself. It's not the same for two people. For one person, I will daven every day. For one person, it's I'll daven three times a day. For another person, it's I'll daven at minyan three times a day. For another guy, it's I'll put on tefillin every day. But set a minimum and stick to the minimum. And that, many say, was the thought behind saying that the encompassing mitzvah is the mitzvah of bringing two sacrifices every day. Consistency. Every day, one in the morning. Every day, one in the evening. When people enlist in the army, I tell them, take on yourself that you will learn something for 2 minutes a day. Take the smallest thing. I don't mind if you learn three psukim in the parsha. There should be one thing you do every day. Take something small on your hardest day before you go to sleep, you'll do it. But do it every day. And hold yourself to that minimum. And every soldier says, no, I can do more than that, only 2 minutes. Fine, but there should be 2 minutes that you never miss. You want to do more, but 2 minutes has to be a minimum. I recommend, if you can do parsha every day, 3 or 4 psukim in the parsha. If you can do kitzur shulchan aruch, learn 1 or 2 halachot a day. But that consistency, so then I keep moving. I like telling the story about a guy who learned here, and at the end of his stay, he said to me, Rabbi, it was very nice, and I appreciate the time here, and I don't think I'm going to keep a thing I learned here. And I was in total shock because he seemed to be very into things when he was here. So I said, nothing? He said, let's eat kosher. I live in a place where there isn't so much kosher food. I said, but you daven with such an oomph. You seem to be into it. He said, I don't see myself davening when I get back to my country. I said, tefillin? He said, Rabbi, I work till 2 o'clock in the morning. I get up late in the day. I run for my college studies. I don't see it happening. I said, hey, buddy, I learned with you one-on-one every day. Those were the days we were still living in Kiryat Moshe. So I had a little chavrusa with him every day, one-on-one, for about 5-10 minutes. And I said, I gave you free time. I could charge as a tutor. One-on-one, I learned with you every day for 3 months. Every day we learned. You owe me something for that time. I'm not taking this answer like that. You go back. You still have a few more days till you fly out of the country. I want you to think about one mitzvah that you do connect to. Okay? You're not walking away from all this time saying nothing. Nada. Zero. Zip. Zilch. Now, why was he saying it? Because he had a non-Jewish girlfriend. No. And he was heading back to her. He basically said, it was nice, but I'm going my own road. I said, give me one mitzvah. But tell me one thing that you will do. So before he left, he did me the courtesy, came back and said, okay, I thought about it. There's one thing I like the parsha. Every night before I go to sleep, I'll read a few psukim in the parsha. I said, fine, we have a deal. He left. I didn't hear from him. His girlfriend emailed me every so often. She was contemplating doing giyur, yes, no, maybe. I basically told her that I believe that women should have a rebbetzin who guides them, not a rabbi, so I told her I'll help her find the rebbetzin, but I'm not the one to help her. And after 2 or 3 years, he went off the radar screen. I thought he was gone. And suddenly I get an email, Rabbi, I'm coming back. I'm going to Eish HaTorah. What happened? He stuck to his end of the deal. Every night, he'd read a few psukim from the parsha, And after 2 or 3 years doing that, suddenly he said, I want to do more, I want to know more. And his spirit was aroused. He came back. Started leading a different lifestyle. So Chazal tell us that consistency is key. It doesn't have to be huge, but consistency is very powerful. When I came to Rabbi Feinstein's yeshiva, I was learning about 2 chapters of Mishnah a day. And Rabbi Feinstein was giving a class on 2 Mishnayot a day. He was in the order of Nezikin. I was already in Kachim. I said, by the time he finishes 2 Masechtos, I'm going to finish Shas. So I'm not going to his class. I saw him in the back of the shul every day after davening 2 Mishnayot. So I didn't attend. I got busy with my learning, and I paused my learning of Mishnayos. One day I hear a siyum in the back of the room. They're making a siyum on Shas. They'd already finished everything doing their 2 Mishnayot today, and I was still at the end of Kadjim. I had been ahead of them, and I was doing a faster pace than them. But I didn't hold on to that consistency when I came to the yeshiva. They finished Shas before I did. Consistency, you know.
Well, how do you explain that again? Basically, they...
I stopped. When I had time, I learned.
You found something else that...
I was doing other things, right? Until I came to his yeshiva. I was learning 2 chapters a day when I joined his yeshiva. I put it on pause. I figured I'll get back to it.
Okay.
I didn't get back to it. Meanwhile, they finished Shas. She broke up with him. That happens.
Girlfriend, boyfriend's not serious. You can break up every second. Marriage, you try to hold on a little bit longer.
What did we get to again, just to follow along a little bit?
Because the mitzvah of having a sacrifice every morning and every evening is quoted in the Medrash as being an all-encompassing mitzvah. So we said, how is it all-encompassing? Perhaps because of the importance of consistency and where consistency can bring a person. Okay, then we have the mitzvah of the golden altar on which we bring the ktores. The ktores was a very powerful type of incense. They would burn it and you could smell it miles away. And if you think about it, in the temple you had hides, you had dead animals, you had the smell of barbecue, charred meat. How much can you handle that smell? So Maimonides says the idea of the ktores was that they had a very, very powerful smoke in the ktores. It says that centuries later, when you visited the place of Mishkan Shiloh, you could smell the ktores. You could still smell it. It says miles away in Jericho, the goats used to sneeze from the smell of the ktores. So Maimonides says the idea of the ktores was to ensure that when you walked into the temple, your senses weren't overtaken by the smell of burnt meat, but rather your senses were overtaken by the beautiful smell of the burnt ktoret. In next week's parsha, we will discuss the spices of the ktoret and their uniqueness. That's where we begin next week.